Okay, so this, you know, kind of a survey kind of talk, survey of just my stuff, I mean, not everybody's stuff. So basically no new research. It's all stuff in my thesis. So if all of you have read my thesis, which I doubt, then it should be pretty boring. But, okay, so what's this talk about? It's about defining security of multi-party communication. So, that's an animation malfunction. Okay, so we want to have a comprehensive definition of security, and the most robust way of doing this is this following paradigm, to show that your protocol, the real world in which you run your protocol, is as secure as an ideal world. So this is a simulation paradigm, which essentially goes like this. You want to prove that whatever effect an adversary could produce on an arbitrary environment in the real world, in which your protocol is running, an adversary in the ideal world can produce the same effect on that, on this ideal world that you come up with. Okay? Then you say your real world in which your protocol is running is as secure as this ideal world. So you'll see how this ideal world looks like. And depending on what environments, what adversaries in the ideal world and what adversaries in the real world you want to look at, you get different notions of security. For instance, pretty much all of the classical kind of indistinguishability-based definitions, you could think of them as by restricting to very limited kind of environments, which just runs the indistinguishability-based experiment, the indistinguishability game. So if you just restrict to those environments and look at this definition, it turns out becomes the indistinguishable definition. But in general, you'd be looking at much more general environments. And real adversaries, you could, if you want to limit yourself to adversaries which corrupt only a minority of the players, so then you get the notion of honest majority. Okay, so I'm going to call these kind of definitions network-aware security. This is the word I used in my thesis, so I will carry it on. But it's pretty much the same as UC security, which you've heard of. It has also been called environmental security in some of my papers, as well as in Ordo's book, he calls it environmental security, but it sounds something like talking about greenhouse effect or something. So I am just using this word, network-aware security, where the crucial part is the environment, the network environment. So you already have a definition of security which is cognizant of, a network environment. Okay, so you have a real world in which, in this environment, you're running a bunch of programs for a particular protocol is running, so the parties are talking to each other, and some parties may be corrupt and they're controlled by a malicious adversary. And, okay, you're running this protocol Pi, whose security you're analyzing. And you want to compare it with an ideal world where the parties are not talking to each other, but only to a trusted party, T, which is implementing this functionality that you want. And all the communication is through secure channels with the trusted party. So this is kind of the best you can get if you want to use such a functionality. So this is the definition of what you want to get, functionality. And you want to say that the definition of security goes like for all adversaries in the real world, there should exist a simulator in the ideal world, such that no environment can tell between being here or being here. Okay? So then we call this protocol Pi is as secure as, or is a secure realization of the functionality. Okay? So this is a familiar UC-like definition.
Question?
Yeah.
Can your simulator depend upon the environment?
No, a good question. So what is, intuitively, why would you think this is secure is because if the simulator could depend on the environment, the simulator knows the secrets in the environment.
Right.
So this ideal world, are you willing to live in an ideal world where the simulator knows the adversary here, knows all the secrets in the environment? So to my mind, that wouldn't be a secure definition. Won't be a security you're willing to live with. So this is the right way you want to do things. And all the adversaries you're willing to admit here are kind of considered legitimate. You're willing to live with it. any adversary, okay, so let me go ahead and say this. So there is a, as I mentioned, there's an adversary class from which this for all comes, and this their excess simulator comes from some class of simulators, and you would be willing to live with any simulator in this world. That's when you would call this idea. And similarly, the environment comes from the class of environments.
And if there's some special property of this class, or?
Okay, let's get to it. But typically, you would want these things to be realistic. Okay, so let's look at the ideal world. So the guarantee of security, as I just said, is that you can imagine that you are living in the ideal world. Okay, so even if you are running your protocol, if it has been shown secure according to this definition, then you can imagine that you're living in the ideal world. And in the ideal world, of course, I just talked about security of one protocol, but you could think of security of multiple protocols. So there are multiple protocols running in your real world, and somehow you manage to show that it's as good as being in this ideal world, where there are multiple trusted parties. And you should be willing, you'd call this an ideal world only if you're willing to live with any adversary from this class of simulators. Oh, by the way, the ideal world adversary is called a simulator. So that's the sim. Okay. I'm just here. Now I know there's at least one person in the audience who has not read my thesis. So otherwise, it's all pretty much stuff in my thesis. Okay. Okay. So this is where we kind of leave it. As a cryptographers, once you show that something is secure, you know, as the real world is as secure as the ideal world, we leave it at that. But what is the use of that? Now it's left to somebody who's going to use it to ensure that this ideal world is acceptable, that they're willing to live in this ideal world. Now, for us, it's you know, we don't have to worry about it. The problem specification was the ideal world. But somebody who wants to use it has to now analyze the ideal. So this is done by, you could think of it, the user, as far as we are concerned, as cryptographers, but it's you know, the system security person, the system designer. And they don't have to really do any crypto, because we are giving them trusted party and secure channels. That's pretty much what they do anyway. They assume they are trusted party and secure channels, so they know how to, hopefully, they know how to, you know, analyze the acceptability of an ideal world.
What do you mean analyze? What if they analyze and decide it's not really acceptable, it's not secure, then what do they do?
Then they're doomed. I guess, you know, it's up to them to make sure that they use the tools we give in an acceptable way. Right? So, okay, so what would it be? So they have to, you know, if they design a system in which you use encryption, but then you say once in a while you release your, you know, you decrypt secrets and release it to the world, that won't be secure. I mean, that won't be secure in some sense they think of as insecure, right? It's still a secure encryption that you used, and it's all within the protocol what you did. But the environment they designed is not up to the standards they think of as. So there's an intuitive notion of what it means to be secure for them. Okay. So depending on that, they have to do some analysis on the ideal world they have designed, and, you know, make sure that they're happy with the world. So, you know, they design some banking system or something, and better then make sure that everything is proper according to them.
Your point is that it's them, it's not us.
It's them, and they're not, yeah, and we give them trusted parties and secure channels to work with. Again, all this analysis they're going to do, it doesn't use any more crypto. Okay, so they can't, because all crypto we should have completely analyzed before. So we analyzed all the crypto, and it's for them to analyze this rest of the, that the system makes sense. So the, kind of the thesis of this talk, and of my thesis, I guess, is that in this ideal world, there's no notion of computational complexity. This analysis is done by the users, and they're just going to look at kind of the information flow. Right? The security guarantee is that some information is not being leaked, or you know, or the adversary is not able to force you to do something. And all this analysis is just information theory. So it's going to be just information flow. There's no notion of, there shouldn't be any notion of computational complexity. Okay, so that's the thesis. So, any questions at this point? I'm sure there are, but Yeah.
Well, I mean, I agree. So if you have, I mean, I agree and disagree, but if you have an ideal model,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially designed at the beginning of time complete, then there should be no complexity assumption. But usually, if you want composability, etc.
So the composability analysis shouldn't be done by this user.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, my point is that there should be some functionalities, computational functionalities, even in the ideal world. If you want, for example, model global setup, I guess while I'm jumping ahead to Runstock. But because otherwise, if you eliminate everything, I mean, well, rather than open source.
So what I'm saying is, if you want to, you know, put in another cryptographic protocol now, you have to reanalyze. It won't be a very hard thing to reanalyze. I'll show you how to do it. So we will provide protocols which will compose in some sense. But at the end, when you're done with everything and you want to see the system is secure, when you want to tell a person that the system is secure, that argument has to be independent of the computation.
I don't really agree with that either, because usually we actually want to perform computations on certain inputs that encode certain hard problems, right? For instance, we want to do some data mining, and we don't want to reveal copies of the database potentially, right?
So
if you don't have any computational complexity in the ideal world, you reveal everything that's known about.
So typically, when you know, you wouldn't depend on, so in the real world, you know, outside in the algorithms world, in the crypto, when you're talking about, say, privacy, do you really talk about, you know, this problem is somehow average case hard, therefore we are secure? You know, if you want to talk about that, you better be sure that the problem is really average case hard and stuff like that, right? Otherwise, you're making a leap of faith that, you know, you're using unstated assumptions about the
No, but I might not have any assumptions. I have a database, right? I don't want to reveal too many relations about things that are hidden here.
And you're going to use
find an exponential time, but you know, no one is running exponential time in the real world.
So there you're making an implicit assumption about something about the computational complexity of that problem, unless you want to make it.
Yeah, but it's a very practical thing, right? We have a database and I don't want to reveal things about it. No.
Okay, so well, one option is you could
say.
Can all the information be right?
No, there are certain things that are. There are common things you can find with data mining. If
so
you run forever, we'll find all these things, but.
No, he's saying, what if in the ideal model, the output of the functionality already has some information, which somebody would dig into and get? I wouldn't call such a system secure, because it's depending on some assumption about what, you know, it's not clear what all information it's leaking.
No,
are you willing to live with
that? I agree that this database may be not private in a shallow sense, but maybe it encodes certain computational privacy guarantees that we have, like in real life, right?
We'll have to state what exactly the functionality is leaking, what exactly it is leaking. You won't be able to do that, right? I mean, if you're able to do that, then you won't have to release the database and hope that it's only leaking legitimate stuff.
Yeah, but I could actually state certain computational properties about my database, right? There are certain things that are computationally hard.
Yeah, then
and
you
I
could then you can design a functionality.
The
then you can step back and design a functionality which reveals only the correct things. Only the things you're willing to reveal. If you can state what exactly you're supposed to do. Yeah.
So maybe to try and rephrase what I mean. What you're sort of insisting that that all the complexity assumptions be made explicit.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't necessarily know how to do that. Right. This I think is what Raphael was trying to say. Is that we, you know, suppose we say, okay, I'm willing to let you learn the output of the ID3 algorithm run on this database. And you know, I say that you know that gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling of being, you know, private enough.
So in
but
that
I,
sense,
it's not that I can necessarily formalize.
Okay, in that sense, I can come back and give the restore the warm and fuzzy feeling later. But for now, you know, let's assume this, and I can tell you, you know, the power, as you'll see in a second, the power that the adversary had that we were given the ideal would preserve your warm and fuzzy feelings. But for, you know, being rigorous, I'm going to say that there is no bound on the, you know, computational power that there is in the idea.
So if, I'm not sure I understand, so let's say there was something that you could state exactly, like somebody proved a certain function is a one-way function, provably, like we had a proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
Still, and you wanted to reveal it as part of your output, would that be acceptable to you?
If you want to reveal it.
Like, your answer to Raphael was that he has to state his assumptions clearly.
No, if you do that, then if you know that you're not revealing anything about the input, then you can design your functionality like that. and get
no,
that.
No, I'm not revealing anything about the input if the simulator runs in polynomial time, but I am revealing it if we can run in exponential time.
No, so you design your functionality so that it doesn't reveal the stuff that is not supposed to be revealed.
No,
so
we want to compute f of r, where f is a one function, that's what we want to do. Okay, so that's the functionality. We want to compute this, you know, some database thing.
Yeah, so for such functionalities, this thesis doesn't hold. Okay, so this is useful for most purposes.
Yeah.
If you want to do
so your thesis is basically instead of thesis, you're just saying this is what we'll focus on in the talk, and it's very useful and
yeah.
Why
so this
it's
is
good.
Like this okay. Pretty much covers a lot of uses. I shouldn't say all, I guess, now that it's not contention, but you know, we'll see that we can do a lot of useful things restricted to this notion, this idea. And I'll restore some of the warm and fuzzy feelings, so it's not like we are completely believe there is no condition. Okay, so let's go back to the ideal world. Okay, so this is just to wrap up what I said. Well, I guess you'll have to live with that. It's only an information security analysis that we'll be doing the idea. And it will not use the fact that the address raised probability quantum. Okay? Your ideal notion shouldn't depend on that. So, for instance, the simulation class, the class of address race in the ideal world, may be, say, probabilistic exponential time.
That's a computational assumption. Exponential time is a limited computation.
No, okay, good. I'm willing to, philosophically, it could be any unbounded computation.
Oh.
Okay, I'm saying, you know, in particular, you'll be willing to live with these things, which is a subset of unbounded computation. But we'll actually be able to get something even smaller. But for now, just say you're willing to live. Okay. Now let's go back to the real world, and what should the real world be like? Well, it should model the real world. Of course, not quite, but. So here we may assume that the address and the environment are probabilistic polynomial. Okay? And it's also not a, you can always contest that assumption with all the asymptotic stuff involved there, but this is the way we know how to do it, so we'll do it. And the main thing, though, that we don't want to compromise on is that we should allow an arbitrary environment who can arbitrarily interact with the adversary life. So this is the essence, at least in my view, of the UC definition, that you have an arbitrary environment who can arbitrarily interact live with the adversary, even while the protocol is going on. It's not like the environment lets the protocol start and run, and then at the end gets input and talks to the adversary. This interaction with the adversary is online. Okay? So this is the power of, modeling this is the power of UC security, and this is something we don't want to compromise. So whatever we see today, we won't change the real world at all. So it's the same real world as your familiar UC. All that you're going to change is in the ideal world. Okay, so I've been talking about UC security, so let me just make it a little more precise, or say a few things about it. So it was introduced by Ron and Ron Kennedy, and independently by Pittman and Widener, and it has essentially the same things we just saw. So the environment class and the adversary class are PPT. But in addition, in that world, the simulation class is also PPT, probability polynomial time, and we'll see for a good reason. And there are other details which we won't see in this talk. So for instance, the adversaries might be able to cut up the parties adaptively. So that's a real concern, potentially. We won't see that in this talk. Or maybe I'll mention at some point. And much of the ugly complexity of the UC definition is in formally modeling this asynchronous network activity and programming location. So you don't have to worry about it. We just have to, we don't have to really formally model it, at least for this talk. These things happen. These things are real. OK, so. Oh, the very most kind of useful or impressive thing about UC security definition is that it comes with this universal composition theorem, from which it also gets its name. So what's the universal composition theorem? It says, okay, suppose you take a protocol pi and show that it is UC secure. That is, you know, you show that for every adversary in the real world, there is a simulator such that these two things are indistinguishable for every environment. So you prove this just for, you know, this protocol pi for an arbitrary environment, an arbitrary adversary. Then, then you automatically get this following thing, that you can have multiple copies of this protocol in the real world, and that real world will be indistinguishable or as secure as this ideal world, where the protocols are all simultaneously substituted by the ideal equivalents. Okay? So this is a sort of simultaneous security of the protocols. And here the protocols pi, they need not be the same, they could be different. Further, correspondingly, there are different ideal functionalities here. Further, the environment might be invoking them as part of a, you know, there might be another protocol invoking them as subroutines, and this will still hold. So, you know, it's a very useful theorem. You can, where you can analyze only one protocol at a time, and then you can put them together and build bigger systems. So he proved it, Ran proved it in 2001. And it's a great security guarantee. The so there are two things about it. So first of all, it's a security definition. So it's a security definition, and it's a great security guarantee. It's pretty much the best possible. If you want that functionality, you have to give up at least as much as, you know, what happens in the ideal world, and the security guarantee says you won't have to give up anything more. The real world will be as secure as the ideal world. And it comes with this universal composition theorem, which makes it very convenient to work with. So you can, you know, design this big complex real world with multiple protocols and easily analyze that it's equivalent to some ideal world where all the protocols have been substituted by their ideal equivalents.
Why is it the best possible?
Well, in the sense that you want, if you have to have the functionality, you have to live with all the consequences of having the functionality. Right? So the ideal world, you know.
But you can think of a simulator, for example, that runs in linear time.
Okay, intuitively
it
doesn't include things like the complexity of the simulator.
What
does easy
mean?
Well, it means that if somebody's already done the work and analyzed each of these components separately, then you can just use the UC theorem and say that this real complex world is equivalent to this ideal world, which is also still complex, but it's all just trusted products. Okay? So in that sense, you can apply the composition. Okay. And this universal composition needs, well, in some sense, needs that the simulation class is probably supported. So even though I kind of argued that the security guarantee, maybe you could live without this restriction to probability polynomial time simulators, for the universal composition to hold, you kind of do need it. Okay? At least a proof uses it. Okay. So everything is nice. Except it's a little too strong. So there have been sweeping impossibilities, as most of you know.
When you say needs, you mean like the particular proof that was given in this particular theorem relies.
Yeah, that. And if you want to just change that part of the definition, then it won't hold either.
No, if you change it to anything that's close to the polynomial composition, it works, no?
You have to change both sim and real.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's what I said.
No, yeah.
That's what I said. If you just change the sim. Okay, so the impossibility results rules out all sorts of tools we would have liked to have, like commitment zero knowledge. You know, if you had these trusted parties, then you would have built bigger protocols. But in fact, it rules out pretty much all non-trivial multi-party computation. So no non-trivial functionality, pretty much, can be computed using a protocol which is secure in this sense. And there is a series of papers showing stronger and stronger impossibility. However, a few things are possible. One very useful thing that's possible is encryption and kind of similar things with kind of similar flavor, I would say. But however, encryption is about only secure communication, not secure computation. But it's possible. You can do if you restrict to adversaries which corrupt only a minority. You can do multi-party computation. Yesterday, Carl was talking about it, and purportedly Ran also has a proof that this thing worked. So you can do this, you know, at least by Carl's talks.
Are you implying that about a gentleman?
No. Yeah, you can do this. Or another interesting setup results is if you are willing to use some sort of trusted setups, you can do all sorts of multi-party computation. Of course, if you're willing to use a trusted party itself, then you can do everything, just using encryption to communicate with the trusted party. But even with much, much simpler trusted setups, where you don't have a trusted online party sitting there, but the trusted party just picks a common reference string in the beginning, gives it to everybody, and goes off. So in a much simpler trusted party. There's been another variant, Barak et al., where there's a setup which is kind of a key setup. So it's like a public key kind of setup. So there have been results, and next talk, Ron will be talking about some results in a variant of common reference string setup, and also kind of a critique on the previous common reference string setup. So if you're willing to make these kind of trusted setups also, then you can do all multiple. Okay. So this is a state of affairs, but this is kind of an annoying thing. I mean, these restrictions are kind of annoying. And what we'd like to see is if we can, you know, go beyond that. So in some sense, this is kind of the holy grail, at least when this, in terms of this work, when we started, this is a context in which we are looking at it. The holy grail we want to achieve is that first, you want to come to the security definition, which should be as good as the UC definition in some sense, so our intuitive notion of its comprehensive security guarantee. And then we should have protocols which achieve this definition for all multi-party computation tasks in the plain model without these trusted setups. Okay? So UC definition is really good in this sense, but it's no good here. There, of course, are many protocols in the plain model, but they don't meet this kind of security definition. They can't meet the security definition. So that brings us to the kind of the first thing in the title, which is the angels. And
so plain model, you mean authenticated channels? Plain model.
Authenticated channels, or if you don't care about real identities of parties, they could all just pick a verification key as their identity. Then you can do that. Signature verification. Okay. So Los Angeles Network Driver Security. It's not just something I invented just now, the name. I used it in my thesis, which incidentally I wrote here in Los Angeles. anyway, so it has to do with the angel thing, right? Just wanted a cute name. Okay, so what's the definition? It's pretty much the same as the UC definition. For all adversaries in the real world, there should exist a similar to this ideal world such that no environment can distinguish between the two. Except the simulator, so it's a probabilistic polynomial time simulator, but it's also given access to what's called an angel. And I'll tell you what it's in a second. And that's our notion of, you know, giving extra power to the adversary in the ideal world, and the idea is that that shouldn't hurt. But the security definition goes further, and now it's going to strengthen the definition by considering a bigger class of environments. Right? So this is environments which also have access to this angel, and it's a bigger class than just PPT environments, so it's only a stronger definition. This definition now holds for a larger class of environments. So this also shouldn't be a surprise because this is a stronger definition. And that's a definition, that's a new definition. So we have to see what these things are.
What do you mean stronger? Stronger than what?
Stronger than this.
Oh,
giving this is stronger than this. Yeah, but just giving this this angel access to the simulator makes it weaker than the UC definition. So it's a weakening followed by a stronger.
So overall, would you say it's incomparable?
It's incomparable.
So what does it mean to give the environment access to the angel?
So all environments which have access to this angel, such environment should be able to distinguish. The indistinguishable requirement should hold for this larger class of environments. Okay. So what is this engine? It's just a fancy name for a super polynomial time oracle. And I'll probably tell you why that name made sense in that context. And in these works, this is joint work with Amit, two papers, and I'll be talking about both of them. In the first, the angel part is mostly going to be this paper. The angel used in that work just gives collisions in some specific hash function with certain assumptions on the hash function. Okay, there are alternative models possible. So you come up with a different angel, the definition becomes it's a different definition, right? For instance, so basically you can instantiate this framework using angels of your choice. For instance, Barak Sahai, on kind of follow-up work, which achieved whatever this one achieved with simpler assumptions, or more standard assumptions, I should say, more complicated standard assumptions, that you could think of it as using a different set of different angel. Okay? You can instantiate this with different angels, and you'll get different security definitions. If you use a null angel, which does nothing, you get back the original UC definition.
What does the angel do in the
Barak Sahai? Well, their angel you could think of it as has some amount of quasi polynomial power. Okay, it's a complexity class. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, I think that's the really right way to just getting all that polynomial power.
To the simulator, but how do you instantiate
an
angel?
It would be an interactive angel that actually does simulations for you with quasi polynomial. It's a very complicated. This is the angel is very simple.
I mean, you could think of it as a quasi polynomial oracle. You give problems and it solves it. Then it's a simple oracle, but simple angel.
Well, that doesn't quite work.
Yeah,
it doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Just intuitively, you can think of it this way. It's really, you have to look at precise nature. But, you know, that's the
bottom line. Overall, it's a very hairy piece of work, and
yeah.
It's very difficult to make head or tail of it.
Well, I'm not sure if this view is correct, but if you also like you look at the follow-up work, I mean, you can, I think, like the thing that Rand is going to work is totally different philosophy, but if you instantiate it with this philosophy, like you can also view our work as an efficient angel, well, an angel which has a trapdoor essentially, with angels that get realized in real life, like not an imaginary angel,
but your real world also has a common reference trap.
No, but that's an angel. I mean, so you can ask the angel.
No. Here, the real world doesn't have a setup. That's the whole point. The real world, there is no.
Well, you have an angel, so angel gives you.
There's no angel in the
real
world. The angel is only
the
ideal.
The protocol instructions don't.
Yeah, in the protocol, you don't access the angel, right? It's really in the real world. The real world hasn't changed. Everything is in your mind.
Because the environment has an agent, so the environment oracle focuses on.
So I define the security for environments which also will have the angel, but yeah.
But if it bothers you, then it works also for environments that don't have an angel.
The security definition talks about environments which have angels. You can deploy this in an environment which doesn't have angel and it will remain secure.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
saying.
We only consider polynomial time algorithms, polynomial time protocols that do not follow.
Yeah. The
but if you don't like an angel for the environment, you could get rid of it. If you prove security in your framework,
and
you
after
work at the end.
So, again, to emphasize the protocols that I'm going to mention, you're not going to see anything here, are really real. The real world has not changed at all. All the angel business is only in the ideal world. Okay? It's just a tool for defining security. So the simulation class is going to be this policy polynomial time with access to the particular angel. And as I mentioned, in the security definition, we also use the angel to the environment. Equivalently, once you give it to the environment, you could also just as well give it to the adversary because they are interacting arbitrarily. So the security definition has this also. This is only a stronger definition than if you didn't add the angel access to the environment and the adversary. And earlier, I kind of argued that just giving access, angel access to a simulator is something we are willing to live with most of the time. Okay, and why we give this is for the universal composition. So once we give this, so it's a stronger definition. It's like, you want to prove something by induction, you prove a stronger base case, and then you can use induction to prove the thing you wanted to do. So it's like the base case, the security definition of a standalone, you know, one protocol, we prove something stronger than we need, so that we can use this composition or induction to get the final result. At the end, we don't care about environments which have the access to Angel. Okay? We only care about environments which don't have access to Angel, but still we'll go ahead and prove it for environments which have access.
And parties do not access Angel at any time?
No, the honest parties do.
So then why do you have to remove the Angel from the real world?
Well, we don't.
Why should the environment have access to the Angel in the real
world? Well, in the definition we do give it. So once we, so in this definition, when you're talking about environment, it's the same environment in the real world and the ideal. Right, so yeah, so the security definition does look at environment, the real worlds which have angels because the environment is accessing and the adversary is accessing. Right, so the security definition does talk about real worlds which have angels, but that's not what we are shooting for in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
No, why should I be inferred that in the end?
We don't care about angels in the end. There are no angels in the real.
I mean, even if there were, like, parties never exist.
Well, if there were, also it'll be secure. Yeah,
right.
But
it's only a stronger environment. So even then,
yeah,
right. Fine.
Yeah, even if these angels existed in real life, the protocols would be secure. But rather unlikely that these specific kind of angels should exist in real life.
No, but it only provides a stronger guarantee, right?
It's a stronger, yeah. Technically. Yes.
I think angels exist.
Peace, knowledge. Okay, at a rush. So these angels are very specifically designed so that they'll be useful for simulation, but will not cause any problem to the security of the protocol. So they, even if they are in the real world, the protocol will still be secure somehow. And but they are designed so that the simulation can use it. Okay. So. In these works with Amit, what we have is that the angel answers only select queries. So it can find collisions, but it won't find all sorts of collisions. It will be very selective in what it answers. Okay? And what Barak Sahai does, you could think of it as, you know, angel has a certain level of power. So it's a certain level of power that doesn't cause a threat to the security in the real world, but it's just enough to do the simulation. So basically, you know, heavy duty use of some complexity leverage and machine.
So if you make the angel selective, it answers only selective queries. So isn't that a weakening of the definition?
No, so the angels can, you know, they have all the information that the adversary has.
Okay.
So just using that thing, they're going to do some. So the angel is defined as something which, you know, gets a query, it runs a program on it, right? So it checks something, and then it answers if the check matches. And this check is something the adversary would have done himself. So it's not like we are, you know, giving information about secrets in the environment.
But it's saying that simulator can perform some quasi-polynomial tasks, but not others.
Yeah,
others. So that's a weak move.
But even the adversary can do that. So.
Well, we are just saying the simulator has access to this particular agent. We're not saying the simulator can do all quasi-polynomial. I mean, it's good that the simulator.
I mean, we want them to be as weak as possible, right? They use these things, they can't answer any quantum polynomial thing. It would be good for them to be as weak as possible, but it's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it matter if the angels have memories? Or?
The angels in this world doesn't need, but if you want to think of these as angels, they do keep state. Yeah. You could put the entire simulator inside the angel, right? You could put everything that the simulator has to do.
Right.
It's really the mother of all simulation. Yeah.
There's a term for the adversaries that just hand off everything.
The dummy adversary.
Right. So you could have. You're saying you can have a dummy environment that just hands everything.
No, you could have a simulator for the dummy adversary as your angel if you wanted. Right. That would be.
Right.
If you can make the whole work, yeah, that'll be enough. But here the angel is much simply stated. It's some oracle which finds collisions.
Basically, that's the job. You say angel just takes care of everything, and, you know, the simulator just, you know, keeps talking to the angel.
And then all you have to do is build the angel. And that.
Well,
So just to check, so this angel, is it crucial that the angel knows the state of the adversary, or he's just an oracle?
This guy also needed to know one fact, which is who is corrupt. The IDs of the corrupt parties.
And BSO5 also, or not?
Yeah. Yeah, they do, yeah.
So what is this thing with the state? I didn't understand.
What is that?
The issue with the state on the other side.
It's not an issue. You can have angels which keep state on the adversary.
Okay.
It's much here. It didn't have to. So it's kind of a simpler angel to talk about.
Okay.
So yeah. Okay. It's a meaningful definition. You might argue that having this ideal world, you're not happy. You're not willing to live in this kind of ideal world where the adversary has access to angel. But arguably, it's meaningful in a lot of situations. Okay, it's comprehensive in the sense that it talks about a general network environment, well, comprehensive network-aware security guarantee, and it's universally composable. So it retains all the useful properties of UC in that sense. Technically, it is technically it's incomparable, but it's intuitively weaker, and the use of doing all this machinery, defining all this angel stuff, is with some carefully designed angels, you can do all of multi-party, all general multi-party computation in the plain model. So that's what we get from giving up a little bit on what a notion of security is. You're willing to live with the angels in the ideal world. In the real world, you don't need common reference or other set.
Not like philosophically assume, for example, you were able to prove your result with an angel which is like some piece-based complete oracle or exponential time complete oracle, for example. I mean, so will this have any meaning at all? Because what you're saying whatever I can do in real life, I can do in the ideal time with, you know, exponential time oracle. So
the infirmary in terms of, you know, say your bank account, your adversary with piece-based power will not be able to log into your bank.
Maybe you give an example of.
We are talking very abstract, so.
Give an example of functionality where it doesn't matter what the power.
You want to operate your bank account? I don't know. So you do all sorts of encrypted interaction with the account, with the bank.
Actually, commitment is not a very good example because I might have some side information that's computational hard, and given that, I can actually commit this. So, you know,
commitment
to
the big commitment.
The ideal commitment to cause a polymorphic simulation is weaker than, you know, what you
yeah, but that's but always the case, not because it's committed, because polymorphic simulation talks about.
Yeah, for instance, you want to say
commit
to. You want to commit to.
The side information will always be, right? It could be that you have a very weakly one.
It's a lottery or something. You want to predict, you know, you want to make a guess, and if the lottery is drawn correctly, you'll win.
Yeah,
right? You want to commit to your guess.
You know,
even if you have piece-based computation power, you don't get any.
Yeah, but that issue is always there. So
okay, so let me actually rush because there are quite a few. We haven't yet started talking about monitors. So okay, this is the end of the first angel part of it. And now I come to the second part. So we, you know, I've kind of argued that we have achieved what we wanted to do. What we set out to do, then why more definitions? It's another paper for sure, but why? well, the point is that
only one.
So far. There's room for more. Well, thousands of papers. Okay. So we definitely do get guarantees, but the price we pay is that the protocols are complex. Okay? It's true for all of the UC. Other protocols, even with common reference. So we'd like to explore what can we get from simpler protocols, but maybe the security definitions are more complex and maybe even weaker. Okay, but still, we'd like to get something out of simpler protocols. So further, you know, there are many protocols you think that it should be secure. You know, the zero knowledge, you know, using this commitment, the simple Blum kind of stuff. Why is it insecure? Why doesn't it compose? So we'd like to get some guarantees for protocols which are simple like that. And finally, this, you know, if you there are situations where you might, in theory or in practice, care only about restricted environments and restricted, you know, situations of composition, then maybe you don't need the full power of the UC security. So some simpler definition might help you, you know set up these simpler scenarios. Okay, so that's all the motivation.
Don't we have the standalone for that?
We do have standalone security, and many of these classical protocols are secure. We'd like to have something which does admit a general environment, okay? A general interactive environment. So let me first remind you all of the commitment functionality. This is the old plain ideal world. How does the commitment functionality go? So this is a trusted party which does the functionality. This is the ideal world with the ideal environment. And I'm calling these guys server and client for later reference, but this is the sender and the receiver. The server has a bit in her mind, and here's the commitment stage. She sends a bit to the functionality records it, and just tells the client that the server committed to something. Okay. Later, in the reveal stage, the server says reveal, and she doesn't have any option what bit the functionality will do. The functionality will send B to the client, B that record. Okay. So this is the commitment functionality. So what is the semi-functionality I'm doing? So here is a monitored semi-functionality for the same task. So in this world, it's the same world so far, but we also have a monitor. Okay, so this is a new being. It also exists only in the ideal world. It's very different from an angel. It can see the entire system state, and it's called a monitor. It's not going to interact much with any of the parties. You'll see in a second. So the commitment stage goes like this. Now the functionality here now has changed. It has become something which I'm calling a semi-functional. So again, it's a trusted party. Earlier, the functionality's program was very simple. Get a bit B, keep it with you. Later, get a reveal command, send it. Now the program is more complicated. It could be some arbitrary protocol. So the server and the trusted party run this arbitrary protocol, who knows what. And at the end of it, if the functionality is happy, according to the functionality's program, it will send comment to both parties. And at this point, the monitor should record a bit Easter. Okay, so the monitor records a bit Easter. Nobody in the system plus potentially knows what it is. Later in the reveal stage, again, there's a protocol. And at the end of the protocol, if everything goes well, the functionality might record a bit B. And again, this is a reveal protocol. So it'll record a bit B, and it'll send this B to the client as a reveal bit. And the monitor is now supposed to check if B equals B star, okay? And if it's not, it should raise an alarm and bring down the whole system, okay? This is what it's supposed to do.
So in the commit stage, does the functionality keep anything inside? Is it allowed to keep something inside?
It could.
So exactly what do we expect from this semi-functionality?
So the good thing with the semi-functionality is, with the client, it's still working like a function. The only thing is the client saw was in the first interaction it got this string of commit. When it was revealed, it got this bit B. Okay? So in this side of the interaction, it's like the functionality. This side is like the protocol. So it's semi-functional. This side is a... So the secrecy guarantee is provided by the semi-functionality itself. For the correctness, we need to go and look at the monitor.
And what kind of trust is assumed in the semi-functionality?
Oh, it's a trusted party. It's a trusted party.
Doesn't reveal anything, just keeps everything there.
Yeah. All the communication is
So is this kind of saying that only one of the parties needs to see the other one?
Yeah. So I'll come to that again. So the ideal world consists of these two things.
Both parts of the monitor have, is it bounded or it's unbounded?
Unbounded. The monitor is unbounded. So
the server might not be able to compute these terms.
Yeah. It's not you cannot extract knowledge from the server. Because the monitor can also look inside the environment also. So, and you cannot rewind the environment, so it's not an extractor. So the ideal world now consists of these two things, trusted party and the monitor. And we are going to, at least for this weaker definition, we will be willing to consider this to be ideal. So we ask ourselves, are we happy to live in a world where if the bit B revealed is not the same as what the monitor recorded, then we'll get an alarm? Are we willing to live in this world? If we are, then this is for us. Okay?
I'm sorry, can you say more about this raising alarm? Why does it possibly make sense?
Oh, so bit B star is defines some value that has been committed to. Okay, at that point of the execution, there exists a bit B star. And we don't care what that bit is. If all we care is there exists a bit, then we'll be happy to work ahead and later when we get a revelation to B, and if there is no alarm that is raised, we can be happy that it is the same bit that existed.
So in the real world, you will somehow implement this one?
We'll see in a second. Okay, so as I mentioned a little while back, we get the secrecy from the trusted party, the semi-functionality, and the correctness has to be ensured by the monitor. And the semi-functionality is efficient, and the monitor is unblocked.
What do you mean? Who is efficient?
The trusted party. The trusted party's program is efficient. Because it's not just a dummy program, so I want to say it's a protocol that's efficient. And what we hope to get from all this is there is no need for extraction by the efficient functionality. So if you think of how you prove UC security, you will often have to come with a simulator which extracts something from the address. Okay? And much of the complicated machinery is in being able to do this extraction. And all the trapdoors in the CRS and stuff is for being able to do the extraction. And now we have a definition which doesn't need extraction, so maybe there's hope for simpler protocols.
So not that specific to commitment, or you can kind of make sense of it in general?
I'll say, there are more things you can make sense, make this meaningful. So here's the ideal functionality. It comes as a
question. So you present the monitor as separate from the functionality. Is this an issue of your presentation, or is it something inherent to the model that you have to be separate?
Oh, because the monitor is unbounded, and the semi-functionality has to be bounded. Because for composition, we'll need the semi-functionality. Yeah, so the monitors don't enter the composition thing, but yeah. So we need them. So the ideal functionality now, we have to think of it as composed of these two things. It comes in one package. And this package is nice for selling it to the system's user, right? They don't have to worry about, there's a negligible probability of error. They're guaranteed that if something goes wrong, the monitor will bring the system down. It will raise an error, okay? So the ideal is kind of nice, ready to sell stuff. The as secure as definition is the same as before. We changed the ideal, but otherwise nothing changed. Now, he asked, how do we implement this monitor? Presumably, there's no way to raise an alarm in a real system to bring down the whole system. We are only going to say that the probability of this situation where the monitor is supposed to have raised an alarm is going to be negligible. So this as secure as definition allows a negligible difference. So we can allow that in the real world, with some negligible probability, a situation would have arisen where the monitor should have raised an alarm, but nothing happens in the real world. That's taken care of by this as secure as definition. So we'll be able to realize only functionalities, so functionality is a pair of things, where the functionality comes with the protocol defined. By protocol, I mean what the server and the semi-functionality did, that interaction is already defined. And only if that thing is good enough that the monitor will never have to raise an alarm, will we be able to realize this functionality.
So why do you need a monitor?
For this. I want to sell it well packaged. Okay? That's kind of useful to think of it. You'll see a little more complicated monitor. Okay, so how do you use semi-functionalities? Was that a question? Yeah. So the first one I just showed you, commitment semi-functionality, turns out we can indeed have protocols which realize it. We can go ahead and have something for zero knowledge proof, so this will be a proof and not a proof of knowledge. We can build it from this. And once you have this thing, one option we have is somehow put these things together and get a full-fledged commitment functionality. Okay, so this can be done, it turns out. And this precisely what is done in PSO4, where these things were used to build a commitment functionality. And then you can just plug it into the rest of the technology and build a protocol compiler for semi-honest malicious and have the GMW semi-honest multi-body computation, which is UC secure in the semi-honest world. And finally, you get a multi-body computation, which is secure in the malicious world. So you can do that. That's one option. That's what is done here. But here our interest is in getting something more out of it and staying in this semi-functionality world of weaker definitions. So going from here further, you can do commit and prove semi-functional. Okay, turns out. And then you can get some sort of a limited multi-party computation semi-functional. So again, that's, and I'll come to that in a second. That answers your question, like, can you do more? So there will be a meaningful, kind of meaningful way to define semi-functionality for certain multi-party computation. How much more time do I have?
0 minutes.
Okay, I have quite a few things to say. So I'll skip over this thing, which is that you can really semi-functionality. We use some bizarre assumptions, bizarre kind of patch functions. The assumptions are funny. Tal and Ryan and Yakovenko, I don't know his first name, have a candidate which depends on slightly enhanced version of discrete log assumption, you know, where you assume that discrete log holds for groups with a certain prime modulus, even when you're an oracle, which can take discrete log for groups with another prime modulus. Okay, so you build something like that. How do you prove that it's secure? You have to build a monitor and show, among other things, you have to build a monitor and show that the probability of a log is negligible. So what's the monitor supposed to do? First, you have to say how it records a bit. Well, it's pretty simple in this case. The monitor just records the most likely value to be used. The monitor has access to the entire system, at least in this setting, so far we are saying. So it can just kind of run the system ahead in the future and figure out which is the most likely value, it'll record it. And if the other value gets revealed, it'll raise an alarm, and it's easy to show that if it happens with significant probability, then the significant probability two things are happening. So you can find a collision in the comment mill that I didn't show you. A collision in the hash function. Okay, so now that's out of the way, let me come and tell you what the multi-party computational functionality is talking about. It's a very funny thing, very limited thing. So server and client, there could be multiple clients, but let's say for one client now, they want to compute a function f of xy. Server holds x, client holds y. And it could be client holds multiple y's and there are multiple repetitions with the same x. Okay? That's the situation where it makes more sense. So here's how the semi-functionality looks like, the structure. Server essentially runs a protocol to commit to its input, and the monitor records this x star. Then the client just sends its input to the server. So the functionality allows the server to learn y. Okay? But it's supposed to commit to its x star first. Then it's allowed to learn y. And the client is supposed to learn only f of xy. Okay, so this happens in the second step of kind of computation where the server, well, the server knows x and y, it just computes it, but it has to prove it to the functionality. And, and if the functionality is happy with the proof, it sends z. But if it sends z and z is not equal to f of x star y, then the monitor is. So in this kind of functionality, there's no secret from the server. And the kind of only security we are giving, the securities we are giving, one is that the server is committed to an X star in all evaluations. The client learns only this, because it learned that only that from the server functionality. And things you could think of this flavor are commit and commit and prove, where the server has all the input. There are no secrets with the client. And it turns out you could build very easy protocols starting from commitment semi-functionality, which I said we can from the hash function. Once you have this thing, you can build intuitive protocols and they'll turn out to be secure. But let's go and take a look at what happened again here. So, let's go fast forward up to the point where the monitor recorded X star. It's nice and good, except that this X star, as I defined so far, may depend on Y. But is it a problem? It may not be, because there may be multiple iterations we want to do, and all we care about is that there X is the same X star. So then it may not be a problem. But maybe it's a problem. We don't want independence of inputs. We don't want this X star to depend on Y. So can we fix this? So again, we'll try. Rerun of the same slide, except that the client is keeping its Y locked. So I'll see in a second what it means to be locked. And we'll go ahead and say that when the monitor records X star, it doesn't see the locked state of the system.
It may depend on why, because there might be other protocols running in the system.
The definition doesn't preclude that this guy depends because the monitor can see the entire
system.
But the reason is because of malleability kind of reason. That, you know, this might have, you know, come into the system and he might be just playing back something that came from the system. So at this point, Y is still locked. So the XTAR, by definition, the monitor cannot see Y, it has to record an XTAR which doesn't depend on Y. And then the rest of, okay, the rest of the thing goes on. The interesting thing was, after that point, the Y was indeed open. So when the monitor is supposed to check this, by that time, when Z was revealed and all that, Y is already out in the open. Okay, and if it's not correct, then it has to raise the null. So that's kind of the fix. Fix as in kind of making it stronger. So this is a notion that came up there. You want to have, allow the client to keep its input locked. And I'll see what's logged in a second, but once it's logged, when it's logged, the monitor cannot see the log state until it's over. And this is so that we get the guarantee of independence of inputs. It turns out that all the protocols that we mentioned earlier still work, except that now the monitor cannot be defined like what we did earlier, that run the system ahead and find the most likely value stuff. You really need to do something different, because it doesn't see part of the system.
It's like the same protocol with a different proof.
So it will have a different proof, it will have a different monitor. So the security statement is slightly different if you want to think of that way. And of course, much more complicated. So that's what I want to tell you in like 5 minutes. Okay, no, it's okay. So let me just fast forward to the slides. I'll conclude in that. It's 5 minutes. Is that fine?
Great.
So the next start is 11:30, right?
11:15.
Okay, so let me just fast forward and say what the interesting stuff is. So this is our formalizing the log state. We can do the same definition for commitment. And this is the tricky part. How does a monitor record a value? You could try using an arbitrary log state and trying, but that doesn't work. What you'll really do, it turns out, is a monitor will have to somehow find a polynomially large list of log states. And in such a way that, let me go ahead and go to the next slide. To record a value, what it does is first it kind of generates inefficiently, quantumly large list of possible log states with certain kind of guarantee. And then it can, then this is a way it records the value. It uses that, one of them, to run the system forward. And we can show that if there is an alarm with significant probability, then you can actually have a reduction to the finding function in the hash function. And there's a part in that this list is small so that the reduction goes. Okay, so that is a kind of, commit and true things get a little more complicated because it's a commit and true, so it's never revealed. So what value should the monitor record? It's not a revealed value. So you'll have to define an extractor, and you'll have a list of log states, and you can do it. Okay, so wrap up. We have these client-server functionalities, which is one in which the server, there is no secret from the server. And you can go further and look at a fixed roles model where there's only one server and it'll always be the server, okay? And in that case, it turns out you can actually use standard assumptions, follow-ups from Malkin, Moriarty, and Yakovenko.
Why doesn't my original quasi-polyprotic work in the fixed roles?
What is that?
Why doesn't my original quasi-polyprotic zero knowledge work in the fixed roles model?
It might. I haven't looked at it. So,
because then if you don't have any non-variability, that's already for zero knowledge. So
this is not zero knowledge. This is this functionality. It's a little bit.
Yeah, because like zero knowledge thing, it should work. And then
it probably does work. Yeah, just for zero knowledge. But I'm saying it can be probably made into this kind of a definition, and your protocol might work. I haven't looked at it, but. Yeah, for fixed roles model, when there is no issue with malleability, the assumption you don't need a funny assumption. And the point is, it still allows an arbitrary interactive environment. So it is kind of concurrent zero-knowledge kind of setting where there's only fixed roles, but it still allows an arbitrary interactor. So it's all like UC except it's fixed roles. So Rafael, your thing also would handle that?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no rewinding.
No, of course.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, so the that might work. Okay. So there are some objections apart from what was raised here. You could raise about Los Angeles framework. One is this, there's no deniability. Unless this judge to whom you are trying to deny doesn't believe in conflicts or believes in angels. You can't mix definitions using different angels. That's another problem. This is not an issue when there are no angels. Non-dead seven functionality we don't know for very limited kind of stuff. Thing about loft is a very strict requirement and we lack it. Can we come with less stringent notions of locking? That's it.